I'm Donal. The guy in the box filled with tens of thousands of cornflakes. It's a coffin, actually. Why would any sane person do that? Well, Serial Killers is the true story of how I hacked my genes by turning the food pyramid on its head. Serial Killers is me, myself, and I versus big food, big pharma, and conventional wisdom. It's David and Goliath. I'm outgunned, and I can't win it like this. I'm one cornflake in a very big box, and I need your help.
Pam, who is this guest this morning, this serial killer, as he likes to call himself?
Well, Donal O'Neill is among a long line of people now that are coming forward and saying, we have been fooled about eating this high-carbohydrate, low-fat diet.
If you're a conventional thinker, this is not your battle. But if you think different, and you're sick of wondering how the hell we all got so sick in the first place, you can lend a hand to clean up some very dirty secrets.
I mean, even the Swedish government is eating crow and saying, we were wrong. We should never have been recommending a high-carbohydrate, low-fat diet. We should be recommending a high-fat, low-carb diet.
So I'd love it if you, me, and we could make some serious noise together. Take this story all the way. Start a storm. But that means we got to fight the big boys. You know, the big boys with their big lawyers and their big brands and their big budgets who refuse to talk to us along the way. The big brands who like you fat, sick, and statined up.
Is it safe to say that Kellogg's, which is shutting down its factory in London later this year, wouldn't be too excited about sponsoring this hour?
Not at all. I mean, these companies, they're selling us products we don't need. They're selling us products that are making us sick. I know they've become very, very popular since the 50s, 60s, and so on. But just because their packages have all sorts of claims on them, it doesn't make them healthy.
13 minutes after 10 o'clock, he calls himself the serial killer. His name is Donal O'Neill. We're hoping to connect with him here in the next few moments. He's in South Africa, so it could be a bit of a challenge. But in studio this morning is Pam Killeen, our nutritional coach, and generally London's biggest rabble-rouser on health issues. And she joins us now. Good morning, Pam.
Good morning, Andy. How are you?
This is an interesting title for a documentary, Serial Killers.
That's right. It's a great title. I haven't seen a great title like this in a movie in a long time, but it really encapsulates what's been going on with our diets over the last 40 or 50 years. I mean, as we have been celebrating, embracing the alleged health benefits of a diet high in fruits, vegetables, and grains, of course, we've been getting sicker and sicker and sicker decade after decade after decade. So, you know, this movie basically goes into the details as to how and why we've been trapped into believing this myth and the consequences surrounding this myth with regards to our physical health. But it also proposes the benefits of the high-fat, low-carb diet. And the star of the movie, the producer of the movie, Donal O'Neill, basically puts himself on an experiment by going on a high-fat diet just to prove to us that it's not a lethal weapon.
In fact, in 28 days, you have some interesting figures about his diet during that 28 days.
Right. So in the in one of his promos, he talks about how he, over 28 days, he consumed 100,000 calories, 100 eggs, 70% fat in his diet. And he did this in order to hack his genes, basically, to avoid heart disease and diabetes. And he was able to prove through his movie that, indeed, by following this diet, he actually got healthier.
And he's a fine Irishman. And we have connected now with Donal O'Neill. You have to understand he's Irish. I was joking this morning that why his mother would deprive him of the second D in the word Donald. But anyway, hopefully he has a good sense of humor. Good morning, Mr. O'Neill.
Good morning.
And a top of the morning to you. Do they say that in South Africa?
They don't actually say that anywhere but Hollywood, but there you go.
Well put. And I'm proud of you for keeping the O in O'Neill. Some Irishmen I know, for example, Dan Flaherty here in London, who's a friend of mine, explained to me that some Irishmen, when they came over, decided they wanted to sound a little less Irish, so they dropped the O, but you have proudly kept yours.
I have kept mine, but we've been running a competition since we released the movie. The first person who is not Irish to pronounce my name correctly wins, but the prize remains open for anybody who gets it right.
Okay, then why don't you give us a little lesson on how to properly pronounce your name?
It's Donal with a long O.
Donal. We'll try and get it right for the show, Donal.
Okay, Mr. O'Neill. Wow. We have, just so you know, Pam Killeen is one serious rabble-rouser. In fact, we affectionately call her the crazy lady because she slays all the sacred cows when it comes to health issues. And it sounds, Mr. O'Neill, like you're in the same business.
Oh, I love a fellow rabble-rouser.
That's great. Pam? I was so happy to see your film, by the way. It is absolutely brilliant. Congratulations. It's been making a lot of waves out there on the internet and generally worldwide. So congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Tell us and our audience right off the bat. Just give us the Reader's Digest version, and then we'll dissect the documentary and its message. Serial killers, what are you trying to tell the world?
Well, the tagline is don't fear fats. So the message really is that simple. Naturally occurring fats are things that we should be enjoying and savoring and rating very highly, as opposed to avoiding, as we've been advised to do for quite some time now. And it's just a personal journey. I come from a family of lean, athletic men who somehow or other go on to develop cardiovascular disease and diabetes without actually gaining weight. So I wanted to see if I could investigate that a little bit further and if there was anything I could do to try and avoid that particular fate.
But that brings us to the beginnings of your film. Why did you endeavor to do this research? What was it about your family and your family's health history that brought you to this?
I think it was initially the shock, because my father had sailed through cardiac stress tests. Even when he was into his 60s, he was still showing up. His athletic background, even though he was no longer, if you like, competing or training and had not done so for some time, he was showing up in tests as being a superior specimen, if you like. So nobody anticipated that there was a heart attack anywhere down the line for him. If you looked at him or you met him or you saw him, you just would not have believed that this man was going to be failed by heart disease. So it was a shock. And then obviously when his younger brother was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, that equally was a shock, because he was only brought in under observation after my father's experience. So that's when it struck me that perhaps there's something genetic in the family tree that doesn't stack up too good. We're all athletes, but that's something you do when you're young and you're able to cope with the stresses of elite training and competition on the body. But when you get further down the line, obviously, general health becomes a major player, and that's not something that we were possibly set up to avail of into old age in my family. So that was the research, and that was my objective, really, to see if I could really expand my own knowledge on the topic, and could I develop some type of intervention.
We'll get to breakfast cereals in just a moment, but let me ask you about your father, because that really, him having a heart attack, what age, by the way, was he at when he had his heart attack?
Well, he wasn't young. He was he was about 70, but he was in super shape. And like I said, there was nothing there to suggest that this was going to happen. And you know, people often they get alerted by, you know, the very word heart attack is a headliner. But I mean, diabetes to me is probably, it's like the cuddly toy of medical disorders, but it's a dreadful affliction. And it's a real slow killer. And 80% of diabetics will die of a heart attack or stroke. So it's although the end event might be a heart attack or a stroke, now the death cert should really be saying diabetes. So it's absolutely lethal and doesn't really get the acknowledgement that it deserves in terms of its criticality, if you like. So I try to, and I don't think the medical world has looked at these as a joint affair, if you like. I mean, it almost seems that, you know, the heart experts are heart experts and the diabetes experts are diabetes experts, but the two are absolutely interlinked. And when you talk about the broader basket of metabolic syndrome, sure, they're referenced in there, but medicine, I discovered along the way, tends to have a very, very blinkered view of any particular condition.
Well, let me ask you about the misconceptions that people have about these two monster killers, diabetes and heart attacks. Let me suggest one right off the top, that most people, in fact, almost all people who have a heart attack have a very high cholesterol rate.
Well, that's not true. I mean, half of all people who suffer from heart attacks have what would be deemed normal cholesterol levels. So that's something that right off the bat, questions the widespread administration of statins and the standard treatment of heart disease. And it also questions exactly what it is. We had a doctor back home next door who had a 96-year-old patient with a cholesterol level of 19.6 in European measures, which is kind of four times a multiple of four over the higher end of the scale in the UK. And that elderly gentleman did not die from heart disease. So, you know, cholesterol, certainly in the older generation, seems to have some type of protective element. And it's an absolutely essential, piece of the health puzzle, particularly as one gets older. So cholesterol has been wrongly vilified, in my opinion. Statins are widely overprescribed. And, diabetes is widely underestimated in all of this.
Now, the general population actually believes that dietary cholesterol joined the dark side, that it causes heart disease. So if we're talking strictly about dietary cholesterol here, you just finished it when you were doing the movie and you continue to eat this way, but you were eating huge amounts of dietary cholesterol. And what happened when you were tested medically?
Well, the first thing is the standard medical test really don't reveal a great deal. At the time when we made the movie, what's called a cholesterol particle size test was not available, or not readily available here in Cape Town, but we managed to get that done. However, it was apparent in my results that my triglycerides were very low, and they're kind of the third musketeer of your cholesterol markers. And what I discovered in the interim through conversations with one of the leading pathologists in the world is that, the triglycerides actually reveal, any single number, they probably reveal more than any other cholesterol or health marker as it relates to heart health. And, if your triglycerides are very low, then you're in great shape, and that will almost definitely correlate to an excellent cholesterol particle number. And the way I try to explain it to people is very simple. The sort of small, dense cholesterol particles appear to be the particles that burrow into the arterial walls and cause heart attacks. The big, bouncy, fluffy particles are kind of, they behave like beach balls on a beach, and they just bounce along and don't really burrow in to the arterial walls and cause any damage. So as a visual, it's a bit like, are you throwing a golf ball down the beach or are you throwing a beach ball? And by the end of filming and up to this point, based on my last set of tests, my cholesterol particle size remains 100% in the large category. And there are five separate categories.
Mr. O'Neill, if I could, we started a list and I'm asking you to complete it. The list is the misconceptions that we have about diabetes and heart attacks. I'm sure you have a list that is going to shock people. Let's start with the one you just mentioned and then work our way down to the top five misconceptions.
Sure. There are that many. You'd probably need to give me some pointers because I could talk all day about the misperceptions, but cholesterol is the first one. I think the link between diabetes and heart disease and strokes and whatnot is something that many people are really not aware of. They think that diabetes is something that can be very easily managed, medically. The other thing I would add is, next to statins, diabetes is probably the greatest business opportunity in medicine today. It's absolutely exploding. I suppose some of the other misconceptions, people think that you can outrun a bad diet, so they'll engage in exercise and they kind of get surprised as to why that doesn't work for them. Exercise has many great benefits, as Professor Tim Noakes has told me himself. He's one of the finest exercise physiologists and scientists in the world. But it will not help you lose weight. It'll kind of round off the edges if you've already lost weight in terms of body definition, but it is not a useful tool for weight loss. So that was a real eye-opener for me because I would not have believed that 5 years ago. But then again, weight was not the issue I was looking at. But I now firmly believe that. I firmly believe that over-exercising in the wrong manner is possibly just as damaging as doing nothing at all. So when you sort of put it all into one basket, it, my takeaway would now be that to give yourself the best chance of a long, healthy life, obviously there are environmental factors that we can't always control, that it's probably an 80% dietary and 20% everything else equation.
Dunno, we have to take a short break, but Pam, I just want to go through the because I think we should go through these myths.
Some of these myths, yeah.
Five of them. The cholesterol, the direct link between diabetes and heart disease, which people underestimate. Diabetes, he said, is exploding. I want to ask him about that. Exercise, you don't lose weight. And then number five, I want to get into this whole why this attack on breakfast cereal. So much to talk about with Donnell O'Neill, and we'll keep working on the pronunciation of his name. Let's just call him Mr. O'Neill. I think we got that part right. We'll be Cereal Killers is the name of his documentary. We'll be back with more. And we welcome your phone call, 643-1290. Mr. O'Neill talking to us all the way from Cape Town, South Africa. Back with more in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
Hi, I'm Donal, the guy in the box filled with tens of thousands of cornflakes. It's a coffin, actually. Why would any sane person do that? Well, Cereal Killers is the true story of how I hacked my genes by turning the food pyramid on its head. Cereal Killers is me, myself, and I versus big food, big pharma, and conventional wisdom. It's David and Goliath. I'm outgunned, and I can't win it like this. I'm one cornflake in a very big box, and I need your help.
Pam, who is this guest this morning, this serial killer, as he likes to call himself?
Well, Donal O'Neill is among a long line of people now that are coming forward and saying, we have been fooled about eating this high carbohydrate, low fat diet.
Okay, see, I'm not man enough to do this, so I'm going to have to get Pam Colleen to do this. What Mr. O'Neill may not recognize, having produced the movie Serial Killers, Pam, is that we have a very large plant in East London that employs hundreds of people. It's about to shut down, which basically markets carbs. And we have another big industry, which has just started up in London, which also markets carbs. Can you break the news to him?
We have a new factory that's being built in London that's going to be manufacturing pizza. And I just don't see how in the next 5 years it's still going to be around, because more and more people are learning about the damaging effects of a diet high in carbohydrates. I don't know, Donal, if you're seeing as well a trend around the world where people are actually using this new information to change their diets over. And I don't know if anybody's collecting the data as yet, but I would imagine that the consumption of carbohydrates has progressively been going down over the last few years simply because people are learning this information. Have you noticed any trends? Yeah.
In Cape Town, more so than anywhere else in the world that I have seen, I mean, Professor Tim Noakes has had an absolutely enormous influence here in South Africa, because you will see Tim Noakes breakfasts advertised, you'll see lunches, you'll see dinners, you'll see menus coming out dedicated to his movement here in South Africa, which is really quite incredible. So it's certainly happening here. I notice on a macro economic scale, if you like, Kellogg's are reporting falling cereal sales. But, I mean, these companies are smart. They're not stupid. So the one thing they do understand is that when sales start to fall, they must react. And you're already seeing margarine products being loaded up with butter. So there's a swing, and that swing will be driven by consumer demand.
Now,
these companies will redirect.
Let's talk about a couple of the experts that you feature in your documentary. One is Professor Tim Noakes, another Dr. John Briffa. And there's a scene I want to touch on with Professor Noakes that really, really caught my attention. And that was when he took his own textbook, his own medical exercise physiology textbook, and he ripped one page after another out of his book. And it was all the information he used to believe was true around nutrition. That was an incredible scene. He's eating crow over what he used to believe was true about health and nutrition.
Yeah, he's a remarkable man, and he was enormously generous in the making of the movie in every respect. And he is somebody who has built an absolutely stellar, career resume. And here he is in the autumn of his career just saying, I got that wrong. And make no mistake, he is probably the most prominent sports scientist in the field of endurance performance. And what he was doing in the movie was ripping out the chapter on carbohydrate loading in his world-famous book, The Lore of Running. So anybody who competes in endurance running to any level will be familiar with this publication. But he's now just ripped it out and said, sorry, I got that wrong.
Okay, what did he get wrong and what's the truth?
What he got wrong, I mean, he himself was an endurance athlete, and he had worked with many of the greatest endurance athletes in South Africa, some of whom were the best in the world in their time and in their events. And he was discovering, you had guys like Bruce Fordyce, who's probably the greatest ultra runner of all time. Those are the guys who run multiple marathons in one go. Bruce Fordyce continued to run hundreds of miles into his 40s and 50s, and he started to get fat. The same thing happened to Tim Noakes himself. He was still running 100 miles a week, and he was getting fat, and he was pre-diabetic. So his metabolic health was falling off a cliff, as was his athletic performance as he got older, and he could not understand that. So when he himself, and this is what people forget, I mean, the first thing he did was he corrected his own metabolism and his own cardiovascular health in the first instance before he went public and advised everybody else to do the same. But he was pre-diabetic. His uncle and his father had both died from the complications of diabetes, and he was looking at a similar fate. So he intervened out of self-interest in the first instance. And he then stepped forward to suggest that not only had he got it wrong, but really the entire medical profession had been getting it wrong for a very, very long time. And the one man who got it right and really sacrificed a hell of a lot in terms of his career trajectory is Dr. Stephen Finney, who's the author of The Art and Science of Low-Carbohydrate Living. So if you want to know how to do this, go get that book and get a hold of Tim Noakes' Real Meal Revolution, which is now the fastest and largest selling book ever in South Africa. So it's been astonishing, A, his turnaround, and B, his impact here. And his impact is now very certainly going global. So the guys who got it right have been in the dark for a long, long time, but they have been there. And in terms of endurance performance, Steve Finney is that man. He's now 70 years old. He's a Stanford and MIT graduate. And he has been struggling for 35 years to get research funding to prove that a diet high in naturally occurring fats and low in refined carbohydrates and sugars is incredibly healthy.
Mr. O'Neill, I want to jump in because I want to ask you in just a moment about why this attack on breakfast cereals. But Lisa's been waiting on the line. Lisa, your comment.
Sure, thanks. I saw your documentary about a month ago, and I found it fascinating. So I've been trying the high-fat, low-carb diet. I'm not perfect at it, but considering that I pretty much just ate carbs and sugar before, I think I've come a long way. But my question for you is, a lot of the carbs that we eat are fortified with different vitamins and so on. And I have just been noticing lately that I've had some numbness in my feet at night and so on. And I researched and found that B12 is a vitamin that I probably need to supplement with. And I'm just wondering for you, too, if you have found any adverse consequences to this diet that you need to address with different vitamin intake or other measures to compensate for what we're maybe not getting out of our breads and carbs.
Actually, I can address that question. Where B12 is concerned, of course, if people are eating enough red meat in the diet, they should be getting adequate amounts of B12. Sometimes what ends up happening is people can develop what is known as a functional deficiency, and that has a lot to do with the gut ecology, actually, when the gut ecology is off. More directly to your question about transitioning over to eating more animal fats, what I have to do with my clients is they have to actually do things to address bile. bile production and bile flow. What happens is when you've been following a low-fat diet, there's a really good chance that bile production is stagnant or blocked. And so when people eat animal fat, it can feel very uncomfortable for them at first. So very simplistically, I don't have a lot of time to get into this, but very simplistically, what some people have to do is they have to consciously consume things that stimulate bile, that help to thin bile, things like lemon water, apple cider vinegar, raw sauerkraut. Some of these really sour and tart foods are really incredible for helping to support the bile. And you must also potentially consider gradually increasing your consumption of animal fat simply because of bile having, gone to sleep for so many years. You have to gradually wake it up.
Okay, great. Thanks for the help.
Okay. Anything you want to add on that particular score, Mr. O'Neill?
No, I always go back to, again, Tim Noakes' advice is that each of us is an individual, and whether it's athletic performance or performance in life and general health, that we've each got to find our own way, because different people will react differently. What I have seen from a very large number of males is that this is almost a home run every single time for a guy, and women do appear to have sometimes a slightly more complex path, but certainly for men, I've been a conditioning coach, and I've been in and around guys for a long time in that type of environment. But we just see incredible results very, very fast with men in their 40s.
Let me put an accent on that, Pam, for people who haven't heard about the L.A. Lakers and what they're doing.
Right. Some professional teams are starting to catch on to this. The L.A. Lakers, there's been, a two- or three-part series on some of the, like even Steve Nash is getting involved in this, trying to eat more animal fat. And they've been buying freezers full worth of grass-fed beef, and they're eating beef jerky as a snack now instead of some of the junk foods. So, the professional athletes are starting to catch wind of this.
Mr. O'Neill, I normally don't use dirty words on this show, but I'm going to use one just for effect, okay? Let me spell it, because it's a family show. Here's the dirty word. I understand you think this is a really dirty word. B-R-E-A-D.
Oh, dear.
Bread.
Yeah, it's a problem. And, Dr. John Briffa, we asked him what would he take out of the food supply in the UK to improve health across the board? And he said the first thing that he would take out of there is bread, because it's so pervasive. And modern wheat was a creation from the 70s. I mean, the scientist who did it actually won the Nobel Prize. But the bottom line is this, that, modern dwarf wheat, as we call it, is something different than my grandparents and parents grew up eating. And the original wheat is no longer commercially available anywhere in the world today. But this new modern wheat has a vastly more aggressive impact on blood sugar levels than, let's say, original wheat. So it's not great, and it's everywhere. And, they've proven that for many people, it elevates blood sugar more aggressively than plain sugar. So that healthy wholemeal is really a farce.
Now, the actual poster for your movie is you lying in a casket surrounded by flaked cereal of some kind. How did you get the inspiration for such a powerful poster for your movie?
The thought just came to me because I come from a marketing background, and I was in a situation where I really didn't have an advertising budget or anything like that. This was, a journey of hope. And I felt I needed to try and produce an image that would sort of cut to the point and grab attention. So we actually got in a coffin and filled it with cornflakes and got a photographer around and took the picture, because, I figured these cereal companies are using boxes every single day to trick us into buying their products. So I thought I'd just use one and
Mr. O'Neill, I mean, I come back to the fact that we have a major Kellogg's plant right here in London. What are you saying this morning about the health effects of eating breakfast cereals?
I think the easiest way to put this is that the worst egg you can find is better than the best cereal you can find.
The worst egg is better than the...
I like it.
In fact, some have suggested, and Pam has suggested on this show before, that nutritionally, you are probably just as far ahead eating the cereal box as the cereal in the box.
Have you seen those experiments? Those experiments that were done, like Paul Stitt found it when he was working at for a cereal company. They took lab animals and experimented with them eating the actual cereal versus the box. And the actual rats that ate the box lived longer than the rats that ate the cereal.
It's fascinating, and it's just remarkable how these cereals and the multi-billion-dollar message behind them has managed to push off, you know, eggs and Greek yogurts and full-fat nutritional foods off the breakfast table. But they've done that. But I think they're going to have to reconfigure things moving forward.
Mr. O'Neill, let me ask you in that regard, because we have this image of breakfast cereals that some of them are rather sugary, but otherwise are pretty wholesome, and that's why we have the big plant in East London. I was in a pinch yesterday for time. I did stop off at McDonald's to grab an Egg McMuffin, and the first question the lady asked me was whether I wanted the yolkless egg. Tell me about McDonald's working with the illusion that egg yolks are bad for you.
I don't even know where to start. I mean, I mean, if you're going to McDonald's, you've stepped out of the health zone right away. So, but they do
busted,
pretty
Andy.
Good coffee. I will give them that. But everything else in there is
suspect.
It's just a no-go area, really.
But let me start on that specific point of McDonald's demonizing or accepting that the public who frequent McDonald's has demonized egg yolks.
Well, I guess they'll be using that as a strategic marketing tool, because here we are talking about McDonald's introducing something that would be conventionally received as being healthy. And they did that with salads in the past, and, you know, that's what they do. But it's nothing more than a PR play, in my opinion, which they're very, very good at.
Can you straighten us out on the value of having an egg yolk as part of your Egg McMuffin, should you choose to have an Egg McMuffin?
Well, I mean, if an egg was an iceberg, I mean, the egg white is just the tip of it. I mean, the joy and the goodness is all beneath the surface in the yolk, and that's where the magic is. So I was eating 25 of those a week during filming, and if you could start from scratch, you probably would struggle to create a better naturally occurring food than an egg. It's really just packed with so many nutrients, vitamins, amino acids. It's almost the perfect food.
Almost the perfect food. There you go. So McDonald's has demonized the egg yolk. Folks, when you go to McDonald's, make sure you have the egg yolk. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to wrap it up. Donal O'Neill, producer of this documentary called Serial Killers. What are the takeaways? We'll ask him in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Pam, we have enough billboards along Wellington Road, but if we were going to add one, I'd want to see this message. You do not get fat from eating fat. Let me just give you the Reader's Digest, then I got a version of what Mr. O'Neill is saying this morning. Contrary to popular belief, you do not get fat from eating fat. You get fat from eating too much sugar and grains. Refined carbohydrates promote chronic inflammation in your body, elevate low-density LDL cholesterol, and ultimately lead to insulin and leptin resistance. Insulin and leptin resistance, in turn, is at the heart of obesity and most chronic disease, including diabetes, heart disease, cancer, and Alzheimer's, all the top killers in the U.S. Here's the key part. Our guest this morning, Donal O'Neill, turned the American food pyramid upside down, eliminating, here's the crunch of everything we're saying, eliminating sugars and grains from his diet and dramatically boosting his fat intake, thereby reducing his hereditary risk factors for heart disease to nil. Now, Mr. O'Neill, if I could, you dropped a little bombshell. It's nothing new, but it's such an important factor in the health picture in North America, especially today. The explosion, and you use the word, the explosion of diabetes. Why is that, and what are the implications for our society?
Well, the implications, let's start there. I mean, it's been estimated that by before 2030, diabetes alone can bankrupt the U.S. health system. So it's fiscally, it's a cliff. I mean, that's what you're talking about. In terms of population health, it's a dramatically impactful scenario because, and it's a dreadful scenario because, I mean, diabetes can lead to major organ failure, you know, blindness, loss of limbs, you know, heart attacks, strokes. It's a horrific condition, and it's been sanitized, and there's this perception out there that it's something that can be easily managed, but you know, I think that the modern world is all about an instant solution. And when you look at people walking around with insulin pumps, who they'll eat a cake or a cookie or something of that nature, and then just pump themselves with insulin, that is no way to live. And it's certainly, based on all the research I have done and what medics are now telling us, they're saying that this is absolutely, it's crazy, and it's going to lead to very, very dramatic consequences, both fiscally and from a population health perspective.
So let's turn the healthy eating paradigm upside down. I mean, what we are hearing in mainstream media, even to this day, and from our medical schools and so on, is that, you know, eat more fruits, vegetables, and grains, and these are going to make us healthy. And unfortunately, we've been doing that for decades now, and we keep getting less healthy. So we're going to turn that upside down. We're going to bust that myth. And I want you to explain what you ate in the movie, what you eat today, typically breakfast, lunch, and dinner. What truly is healthy?
Well, the easiest way to do that is to just explain, I guess, what I eat now. During the movie, I overate for the purposes of outlining that fat is not something to be feared, that red meat isn't going to kill you. But I dropped a little bit too much weight because the more fat you eat, and bodybuilders knew this 25 years ago, it will lead to, in some cases, fairly dramatic weight loss. But in the movie, I gained muscle mass. I lost body fat, and I did that by eating, and I still eat in a similar fashion today, only slightly less. But breakfast is typically eggs, bacon, avocado. It could be Greek yogurt. Macadamia nuts are my go-to nuts of choice for a number of reasons.
But let's clarify, your Greek yogurt is high fat, not low fat, right?
Absolutely. There's no low-fat anything in my diet, and I've actually got to the point now where I make my own Greek yogurt. So
okay, so for breakfast, eggs, bacon, avocado, macadamia nuts. Let's go to lunch.
Well, don't forget the Greek yogurt and berries. And then when we get to lunch, lunch can be a great big salad with, in South Africa, we have some great snack options like biltong, which is kind of like beef jerky. But I also enjoy salmon, mackerel, some of the oily fish out there, which is great for a number of reasons. And lots of green vegetables. And I'll always turn back to the Greek yogurt and berry combo for a bit of a snack. I eat 85% dark chocolate. And then when we get to dinner time, there's nothing I love more than a nice juicy ribeye steak, cream spinach, and I do now, I didn't during filming, but I do now eat you know, sweet potatoes occasionally. But that's typically how my day stacks up, and coffee is enjoyed with cream or coconut oil in there.
That's right. What do they call that, the bulletproof coffee?
Yeah, the bulletproof coffee, and they put some MCT oil in there too, which I haven't done, but there's some of that MCT oil in there, or MCT in coconut oil already, so I think I'm...
Yeah, you're covering your bases, yeah.
O'Neill, Mr. O'Neill, it's been quite a sermon. We're into the dying seconds. Wrap it all up, if you would, the problem and the solution in the next 60 seconds, if you could.
Biggest challenge out there is refined food. Keep it simple. Just try and eat real food. Don't fear fat. It's butter, it's lard, it's coconut oil, it's real meat, it's vegetables, it's not cereals, it's not bread. And it's not Subway.
Are you working on any other projects right now?
The world Ironman champion Sami Inkinen has just broken a record and rode from San Francisco to Hawaii with his wife in a state of nutritional ketosis. We have had cameras on the boat. We filmed Sami for a couple of weeks in California in June. We met Steve Finney, the scientist I mentioned earlier, and Serial Killers 2 will be looking at the world of elite athletic performance and the athletes who do incredible things using fat as fuel. So that's what's amazing. Coming next.
Very interesting project. Now, one of your websites is www.serialkillersmovie.com. Have you got any other websites you'd like to announce?
Yeah, we put a blog up called letfatbethymedicine.com. And we post up there occasionally, so there's lots of information on how we ate during the movie and some other blogs up there as well. So.
Mr. O'Neill, we're out of time. What a pleasure it's been, all the way from Cape Town, South Africa. What an education. We thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Have a great day.
Thank you so much.
Let fat be thy medicine. Wow.
That's
Pam,
true.
Wrap it up for us.
Okay, I'll just repeat the websites, serialkillersmovie.com, and he also has a Facebook page, Serial Killers Movie.